So until now, we've been dealing with cases where everyone is in danger. And the question that we've been asking is, are you allowed to save yourself instead of saving someone else? So let's say, back to the case in Bogmatsia, the Asampis. You guys are both in the desert. You guys are both dying. And if you drink the water, you'll survive. But if you don't drink the water, let's say you split, you'll both live. The question we've been asking is, are you allowed to drink the water and save yourself? Or do you have to share it and both of you will end up dying? But now I want to take it a step further. What if, in order to save your life, you have to put someone else into danger? Meaning, someone wasn't in danger before, and by saving your life, you're going to make someone enter into being in danger. So, for example, we have established Chayecha Kodmin. Your life comes first. So in the case of the desert where you're holding the water, you're allowed to drink it to save your life. What about the following case? The Nazis, during the Holocaust, tried to prevent people from running away. So they said that if you run away, and you're successful, you're not successful, whatever it is, we're going to kill 10 people. So think about it like this. In order for you to save yourself, you are going to put 10 people to danger. Those people were not going to die beforehand. It's not like the case of the desert where everyone's going to die, and you're just deciding, do I save myself or do I help the other guy? Here, in order to save yourself, you're going to put someone else into danger. So what do you guys think? Yeah.
I just have a question about that. Can you really, given your example of the Holocaust, can you actually really say they're not in danger?
Ah, so that's a great question, okay? Now, everyone always makes that point. Listen, you're in the Holocaust. But let's say status quo is they're not in the circumstance where they are going to die right now. Everyone's in Sakana, but we can kind of create a hierarchy in terms of levels of Sakana, but your point is well taken. So you could argue that, no, the entire halachic reality is different because everyone's already in Sakana. Everyone's just fighting for their lives. But you can definitely argue the status quo is people are definitely in a state of danger, but they're going to now be killed. So we could definitely make a distinction. Yeah.
I think it's similar to that. If the status quo is that you're not in danger per se, then if anything, if you take a step back before putting someone else in danger, you're putting yourself in danger.
Mm-hmm.
I assume if you run away, they'd kill you if you catch
mm-hmm.
you. So you're not even allowed to put yourself in the
So that's a very good question. It gets back to Adam's point, is that if everyone's in the semi-sakana, are you even allowed to run away in the first place? Because how likely was it that you're going to succeed? And there's a high likelihood that you're not going to succeed. And if you don't succeed, they weren't going to exactly bring you back. They were going to kill you. So it's a very good question. But take this case. This case came up a couple hundred years ago, where the king was going to make a list. Now, different deal with different types of cases, but the list was, some cases are where the king is making a list of, let's say, 3 very wealthy Jews that he's going to make them pay him, let's say, $1 million. Or you can even argue that he was going to kill 3 people. And he was making this list. The question came up, let's say you were on that list. Are you allowed to run away or get off the list, knowing that if you run away, they're just going to put someone else on the list? So in other words, by saving yourself, by running away, you are now endangering someone else who wasn't in danger before, because he's going to replace you. So by saving yourself, you are endangering and perhaps even causing someone else to die. So that's the new question. The new question is not whether or not you can save yourself as opposed to saving someone else, but are you allowed to save yourself even knowing that you're going to be putting someone else into danger? Do you guys think there's a difference? By raise of hands, who thinks you would be allowed to run away? Who thinks you would not be allowed to run away? Okay, so why would you not be allowed to run away? One is in terms of my chazas. How can you choose to save yourself at the cost of someone else? Now, you can't say this is just hatzalah because you're causing someone to die. And you can even argue a step further that forget my chazas. This might even be gram mesicha. This might even be a form of, even if we think my chazas is a pure svara, this is an element. You're not physically killing him, you're not directly killing him, but your actions are consequences. The very, very specific consequences of your actions are going to cause someone to die. But why would you say maybe you would be allowed to do it?
Why you would be able to?
Mm-hmm. So Chayecha Kodmin, we have to take a step further. You have to say that we're going to define this as an act of Hatzalah. Meaning, how are we defining your act of running away? if we'd isolate, put the spotlight on the running away, can we define this as a maisa tzala? So you can argue that, no, from one perspective, you're causing this other guy to die. But from another perspective, you're just saving yourself. The consequences are secondary. Meaning, if you'd ask the person, what are you doing? He'd say, I'm just running away and saving myself. Are there consequences of that? Yes. But how are we defining the action? You could argue that since we're defining this as a maisa tzala, you can still say chayecha kodesh. So if you look at source number one, in this case where the king is going to grab people, and Yad Avram is discussing this question, are you allowed to run away? He says, if you look at the second line, the middle line, he says, Mutl al-Livroch de chayecha kodesh. You're allowed to run away. Oh, it's going to cause someone else? It doesn't matter. Chayecha kodesh, why? Because you're not considered to be the murderer. You are simply saving yourself. We can define this as an act of hatzalah. Now, others definitely argue the other way. They say, you can't do that. The consequences are so clear that you can't just say, I'm saving you. Right? That got back to our question in the very first year of this series, where we asked the question, the famous Diamondite case, where people are in this cave, and the fat person got stuck in the opening of the cave. And the water started flooding from the bottom of the cave, and everyone was about to start drowning, but one of the guys had a dynamite. Another guy had a match. And they asked, can we light this dynamite and blow up the fat guy to save everyone? And obviously, do they want to kill the fat guy? Do they have evil intent? No, they just want him to be somewhere else. They want him to be in another, 1,000 pieces somewhere else. But it doesn't matter, because it's so... The consequences of your actions are so automatic, you're going to end up killing this person. It doesn't matter if you wanted to. So you can say that, listen, all I want to do is run away. I don't want to kill these guys. But does it matter that you didn't want to kill them? The consequences, I mean, that's what we talked about, two different wants. You're not evil. You're not trying to kill these 10 people, but you do want to save yourself, and the consequences of saving yourself are these 10 people dying. So in a certain sense, you really do want these 10 people to die. So you could argue the other way, that you can't define this as a mindset at all. Yeah.
I see a very big difference between those two cases.
Of course. In that case of the fat man, you are actually directly killing him.
So that I would say...
I was just making the distinction in terms of what you want. You can't say, I don't want it.
No, I got that and I got your distinction. But I'm saying that you can't really compare those cases.
Yeah, I only brought it for that secondary point of the two levels of want. Of evil intent versus the automatic consequences of your action.
Okay, fine.
Now, here's another question. The question is, what if we're not talking about your running away will cause someone to die, but your running away will cause someone to be tortured, to be in serious pain? So what do you guys think? Let's say if you run away, you save your life, they're going to end up torturing someone to find out where you are, but that person, that person doesn't know where you are. So they're just going to end up continuously torturing him. So he's not going to die. But because of you running away and saving yourself, he's going to be in tremendous, tremendous pain. What do you think?
I'd say you still could do it. Maybe you just be chayav mavon, like we see that.
Okay, interesting. You're saying for more in terms of chavalah, or in terms of
if you injure someone, you owe them amount of money.
Okay, so interesting.
You know that by running away, this person specifically is going
so
to be...
So either way, let's say you don't know any specific person, let's say you didn't know a specific person. Either way, someone is going to be tortured to your extent. So...
You know that.
So if you think it very specifically in terms of the only problem is my chazas, can we really apply my chazas here? Meaning, think about it like this. Why would it be usher? You say, usher is in my chazas. How can you choose to save yourself over someone else? But does my chazas apply when we're not dealing with murder? Because here, the person's still going to live. He's not going to die. He's just going to be tortured. Also, there's something interesting. If you want to think of it as usher, what would you argue? You'd say that, granted, this is a guy's not going to die. But there is even a sign to say that being tortured is worse than death. There's a shittim kubatza, some suba saflam gimel on the bays, that, and we're not going to go into the whole sugi now, but he says that being continuously tortured is worse than death. Because death is instantaneous. It's terrible. But being endlessly tortured is unimaginable. So in a certain dimension, it's even worse. But you could argue that it's still mutter. Why? You could say that my chazus is specifically only for death, that you can't choose to kill someone to save your life. But when the person's going to live on, then it's fine. Remember, we had three different understandings of Maichazus. One is that Maichazus is not really a svara, it's just about how terrible murder is. This is not murder, so that wouldn't apply. The second is that Maichazus is a pure svara, that you can't choose your life over someone else's life. Now, does that apply for a life of torture? That's only choosing your life in terms of living. So that wouldn't apply here either. And also, if you said like Rashi, which is that Maichazus just doesn't let you use V'chaibam, because V'chaibam, which allows you to violate mitzvahs to save your life, you can only use that when you can say, my life is more valuable than that of Avera. But here, in order to violate that Avera, you have to kill someone. But you can't say, my life is more valuable than that person's life because of Maichazus. But over here, you're not killing someone. Over here, not taking someone's life. So you could argue that it's definitely mutter. And the second reason why you can argue it's mutter is because, back to what we were building before, if you define this as a ma'isa hatzala, if you're defining running away as a ma'isa hatzala, there's no cheshbon of Maichazus. I'm not making a cheshbon. It's not me versus you. All I'm doing is running away. There are secondary consequences, but if you ask... What?
They're secondary.
Exactly. But the action itself is hatzala. So if you look, there's a very fascinating case. The Gemara in Shavuos, Daf Lamed Gimel Beis, in your second source, brings the story of Rashbi, or actually Rashbag, or Shimon Gamliel, which is very interesting because we just came past Lag BaOmer. But it brings the story of when he first ran away. What happened? He was talking with some certain Rabbanim, and certain political issues came up. He said something negative about the government, and someone went and told the government on him. So he went into hiding. And when they made gezeiras against him, he decided that he was going to run away. And this is the story, this is really the start of when he went to the cave and all the things that happened afterwards. But the Gemara says something very interesting. It says that after there was a gezeira, he ran away, but he didn't tell his wife where he was going. So if you look at the last line of the Gemara, source number 2, why didn't he tell his wife where he was going? Because it says, Nashim daikin kalalehen. Dilma mitzarilo megalon. Because women, they can't handle pain. And they're going to very easily give over information. And therefore, if I tell her where I'm going, they're going to torture her. But if she knows where I'm going, she's going to tell them. So therefore, he didn't tell her where he was going. Now the question is, what does that mean? How can a Shimon Gamliel run away knowing that his wife is going to be tortured because of him? So what does the Magen Avraham say? If you look at source number 4, look at the bold.
He didn't tell her that way she won't be tortured.
No, they're going to torture her now, but she's not going to know the answer, and she's going to... Meaning, you could say that, no, the Romans... How are the Romans going to know that she doesn't know? Right?
Yeah.
Whoever the government was. They don't know.
Because maybe they know how women act, and like, she'll like actually tell them like, where the location is of Arabi Shimon. But if she really doesn't know, then they'll sense it and like they'll stop torturing.
And that's not how torturing works. That's not how torturing works. They don't say, "Oh, we got it." You don't know. They're gonna keep them. Meaning, if they have any chashash, you know.
Torture until.
Also, this is not a democracy. Okay, this is we're dealing with thousands of years ago. They can do whatever they got to do to get the information out, and they're gonna assume she knows. So if you look at source number 4, the Magen Avraham doesn't assume like you that the Romans are so nice. He assumes the Mashma Shemutilo Lubroach Kishisha Kars Nefashas Afal Pishem Itochze Gorim Tzal Chaver. You're allowed to save your life even if it's going to cause torture and pain to someone else. Now we can ask another interesting question, which is not for today's sugya. If she did know, would she be allowed to tell him to save herself from being tortured? This gets very interesting in terms of captured soldiers. Are they allowed, if they're being tortured by the enemies, are they allowed to give over the information? Are you allowed to commit suicide to prevent giving over the information? Are you allowed, let's say you know that you're not going to be able to handle the torture. Are you allowed to take one of those cyanide capsules? Are you allowed to kill yourself, commit suicide to prevent giving over information to the enemy? These are like the interesting questions. So also,
from Sada?
What? We're going to have to wait until next semester to go into it, because first of all, Chazal don't mention Masada. There's a whole question whether or not that was mutter. But also, Masada is so much more controversial than you think, because it's not people committing suicide. They actually not only had people committing suicide, they made a lottery for 10 people to go around and kill everyone else in the camp. And then those 10 people chose another person to kill all of them, and then the last person was supposed to commit suicide himself. They didn't commit suicide. So that's a question of, if you're allowed to commit suicide, are you allowed to have someone else kill you first? Meaning, they made a cheshbon that they were going to commit suicide, but it's really hard to commit suicide. Now, in secular philosophy and some very strange philosophies, it's deemed heroic to commit suicide because it's so courageous, it's so difficult to do it. Which obviously gets into the same element of courage to be moser nefesh al kiddush Hashem. To be moser nefesh is it's the very definition of believing in the truth, because otherwise you wouldn't commit suicide. Why is it so hard to commit suicide? Why is it so hard to give up your life al kiddush Hashem? Because if you don't truly, truly believe in everything that you are, in everything you stand for, you're not going to be able to go through with it. If you think that you're going to stop existing after you die, you're not going to give up your life on principle. Right? So it's very interesting in terms of the element of the ability to commit suicide, but they weren't committing suicide. They were having other people kill them so that they wouldn't get captured by the Romans. But we're going to have to hold on that for next semester, because that's a whole topic in itself. But the obvious conclusion here is that the Magen Avraham is showing from this Gemara that you are allowed to run away in order to endanger someone. We don't know from this that you're allowed to run away if someone else is going to get killed, because this is only torture. Now, this comes to this is the conclusion of the chapter we've been building so far about saving yourself at the cost of other people, or in terms of not saving other people. But now I want to go to a very interesting topic, which is a third party. Until now we've been dealing with you are the person in danger. And the question we've been asking is, are you allowed to save yourself? Now we established with Rabbi Kiva the Chayecha Kodman. But what if you're the third party? What if you are walking? What if you are walking in the desert and you're holding that bottle of water but you don't need it? Are you allowed to... Who are you going to give it to? Let's say there's two people there and whoever you give it to is going to live. Who do you give it to? Let's say, in terms of more practical, up-to-date cases, let's say you're Hatzalah or you're an ER doctor or you're dealing with a terror attack and you have a bunch of people that need your help, but you have to choose who to save. You can't save everyone. So you have to choose. This is triage. This is the real cases of triage nowadays. Who do you save? Let's say you have two patients come into the hospital and you have one respirator. Who do you give it to? How do you determine who do you give it to? This happens. It happens. I mean, hopefully you have enough resources that you don't have that problem. But these are the cases. So for example, in the Holocaust, they had the case we mentioned previously of the 500 white cards, where the Nazis gave the Judenrat 5,000 white cards. Now, there was 30,000 people in the camp, but only 5,000 white cards. And these white cards were a ticket to freedom, or a ticket to survival, at least, to being a worker camp, not one of the gas chambers. The question is, who are they going to give it to? Are you allowed to give them out? And if you are allowed, how do you decide? Do you give it to the woman, the children? Do you give it to people who are going to live longer? Do you give it to people who are more important in the community? Do you give it to people who are bigger Talmidei Chachamim? Do you give it to Kohanim over Levim, Levim over Yisrael? How do you choose in terms of that hierarchy? How do you choose? So, there's also actually a very interesting case I saw from Zilberstein, that there was a unit of Israeli soldiers, and they had one medic. And in the middle of a mission, one of their soldiers got hit. And the question was, does the medic stay back with that one soldier and take care of him? But now the rest of the unit, let's say there's another 15 soldiers, so the rest of the unit now is going to be without a medic. Or does the medic leave that one soldier behind and call for a helicopter, knowing that the soldier might not even make it, and then stay with the rest of the unit? What do you guys think? What do you do?
He's considered alive still, or
the soldier?
Yeah.
He's still alive, but he needs help.
I think that he can't come at this moment. You don't think about future.
So Lufanacha. You're saying that right now you have a case, guy's in Sakana, he's right in front of you. You say so here's actually very interesting. Here's something to think about. First of all, we're in times of war. So imagine the medic doesn't stay back with the rest of the unit. The rest of the unit is not gonna fight properly. They're not gonna take the proper risks. So the whole concept of lefenecha versus not lefenecha might not apply when it comes to war. But second of all, maybe this is considered so-called lefenecha for everyone else too, because they're in battle. And if they're in battle, everyone is considered to be theoretically in sakana. Now, would you say it's the same? Maybe not. Would you say that, you have a sakana lefenecha? So 100%. But the concept of lefenecha knocking out the majority might not be strong enough only because you have a concept of lefenecha for everyone too. So in terms of an equal lefenecha, I'd argue, Adam, that you are correct. Although it's possible to argue that really it's not correct. Really, they are considered Sakhama Fanecha completely. But in terms of, come on, they're not. No one has a bullet in them. This guy has a bullet in him. He's clearly more Sakhama Fanecha. So I'd agree with you on that. But the so actually, what was interesting is a son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv. He asked Rav Eliashiv, Rav Eliashiv Paskin, that you go with the rest of the unit because they're all Sakhama Fanecha. Everyone's in Sakhama in case of war. But then Baruch Hashem, it turned out that he asked the question afterwards. He did that. He went with the unit. That soldier ended up being saved. Everything worked out. But that was a real case that actually ended up happening. But these are the questions we're going to deal with now. If you're a third party and you have to choose who to save, how do you choose? Are you allowed? First of all, are you allowed to ever choose? Are you allowed to ever? So you could argue no. You could argue my chazus. Remember, we've been dealing with the cases of how can you save yourself versus someone else. We can apply the same problem of my chazus to this case as well. How can you choose? You have two people in front of you. They both need your help. Let's say they're both equal. And all, how can you choose? My chazus also, if we think my chazus is a pure svara, you're just not allowed to choose. You can't choose one person over another. So you can definitely reject that. I mean, why do you think you can reject that? Why can you say that, no, my chazus isn't the problem here? For all these cases, when you're a third party, when you're a doctor, you have to choose who to save, and you have two people in front of you, why should you be allowed to choose?
You're the caregiver, so you can choose.
Exactly. If that gets considered murder, either way, meaning my chazus is you can't choose that person over you. Meaning that person should live, and you can't choose to kill him to save their life. But here, think about it. If I don't save either one, they're both going to die. That's not helpful. So you save one of them. It's not... Meaning, the problem is when it's murder. Here, you're not murdering, you're just choosing to save. And you can't say it's a problem with L'Samal Dam Recha, because L'Samal Dam Recha is why you're saving one of the people. You can't let the system paralyze you so that no one's saved. You have to act. So the questions we're going to be asking is, how do you choose? So granted, you're going to choose to save someone, but how do you choose? What are the cheshmonos? So just before I go on, remember we talked previously with Achiezer in terms of if there's a chifetz, if there's an object. So we said that perhaps when there's an object, everyone has an equal right to it. So remember in the case of Baba Metzia, we asked, if a person's in the desert and he's holding on to the cup of water, why shouldn't he be allowed to drink it? So we said maybe because the other person has an equal right to it. Because remember, you're allowed to steal to save your life. And if you're allowed to steal to save your life, maybe everyone has an equal right to any object to save their own life. So the question is, if you're a third party, maybe you can make that same claim that I'm holding this, let's say it's water, or let's say it's medication. Maybe the person, both people who need the water or the medication to be saved have an equal right to it. So I can't choose to save one over another because it really is my chazus. They both have an equal right to the water. So maybe you can argue that I really can't choose, that I have to simply put down the water and I can't, but maybe this is, gets back to interesting, and if you really develop back as soon as we've been doing, once I put down the water, I as a third party can't make a decision of who I'm going to save. But if I put down the water, the two people who need the water can choose to save themselves. Why?
Because they're the ones dying.
Because everyone's dying. What principle can you use? Chayach HaKodman. So you can't use Chayach HaKodman because you're the third party. But they, as the ones who need to save themselves, can. So we're going to create this conflict, not this conflict, but this distinction between saving yourself, where you can use Chayach HaKodman, and when you're a third party where you can't. And we're going to have to figure out exactly where to draw that line. Yeah.
What if the two people in front of you were your dad, Chas HaShalom, and your neighbor? Is there a preference to give it to your dad over
100%, 100%. So in terms of tzedakah, for example, there's a mitzvah to save your brothers before someone outside your family. So there's a lot, that's what I'm saying, there's a lot of different criteria, and the question you're going to have to ask is, where do you create the hierarchy of the criteria? So, for example, Talmud Chacham versus not Talmud Chacham, or Kohanim Levim Yisrael, that's the Mishnah talks about that, or Chai Om versus Chai Shah, in terms of how long you're going to live, or importance for Klai Yisrael versus, let's say, importance for the community, or political importance, or other dimensions, family members would go before non-family members. So all these different distinctions are good, but the problem is when they're all going against each other. You know, so let's say one guy's your father, but your father's going to live for another 3 days, this guy's going to live for another 50 years. Do you save your father for 3 days, or do you just save the other guy for 50 years? So that's where it becomes a little problematic, where you have to kind of juggle the value system of what's more important. When you isolate principles, it's easy. We can say, yeah, your family member is better than the non-family member, chai ol is better than chai sha. When they're kind of all melting into the single, you know, complicated pot, it's hard to really make the proper distinctions. So what we want to do now is we want to basically move on into some very interesting cases. So let's start with chai ol versus chai sha. So let's say you have two people in front of you. They're both dying, but if you save one of them, they'll live for 50 years. If you save another, they'll live for just a couple days, or a couple months. So I'll give you some cases. So for example, let's say you have two patients that come in that need a respirator. One of them is a healthy 20-year-old guy, but he needs the respirator because he just had, you know, or he needs to go into surgery, whatever the problem is. If he gets the respirator, he'll live for another 50 years. Healthy guy. Just has this. Another guy is 98, he's on his way out, and he has a couple days, a couple months left to live. So are you, or for another case, let's say you two people are poisoned, and you have one antidote. Same case. One guy's going to live for a long time, the other guy's going to live, well, let's say, you know, both capsizes. You have one life jacket. And one guy is clearly, you know, a healthy guy, can live a long, healthy life. Another guy is on his way out. So would you be allowed to, as a third party, let's say you're not poisoned, so you need the medication, or you have your own life jacket, because you already took one because of chai chakodin, or you're the doctor, so the problem is you don't need a respirator. So you don't need these things, but you are going to now hand out the assets. How do you decide? Are you allowed to choose the guy with chai olam over chai sha?
Yeah, we see that this is the machlokas about the value of a chai sha.
So we did talk about that, but we talked about how in the end, when it comes to saving your own life, you could value your own chai olam versus other guys' chai sha. But remember, the question we had, which we're going to delve into now, is that a universal principle, or is that only for yourself? So if you're a third party, can you make that same cheshbon, that, chai olam over chai sha, or only when it's for your own can you make that decision? So very good.
So we also discussed in the EMT course about triage and prioritizing patients, and four levels. There's black types for people who are already dead or know we can't be saved. Then there's red types for critical, and yellow for people who are serious but not critical, and then green, which is just
very good. Exactly. Younger. So we exactly when you're a doctor though. I mean, you're dealing with this all day. You're not dealing with me all day. You're dealing with different levels of patients. Patients that are on their way out, patients that have a very serious injury, but have a very easy, you can very easily save them. And then there's things in the middle, where the guy's very serious, but you're not going to likely save him. Or the guy's not very serious, but you can easily save him. So all these different kind of levels you have to deal with.
Yeah, but when I was doing my clinical hours, there was never a situation where, they only had one respirator and, that kind of thing, but, I saw a young early 30s with asthma, and then a 90 something year old with stage 4 lung cancer.
So that's exactly what we're talking about. These kind of different things, not in terms of the same seriousness, but that kind of cleverness. Very good. So why wouldn't you be able to choose? So you could argue once again that you're never able to choose. You can't choose one person over another because of my chazos. But we could argue, like we said before, the chai olam is greater than the chai sha. And therefore, since chai olam is greater than chai sha, my chas isn't a problem. Because here you do know, you can make the cheshbon, the chai olam is better than chai sha. So there was a fascinating case, a real case, that happened in Johannesburg several years ago, many years ago. It was actually asked to Eliezer and many other acronyms. Now the case was as follows. It was interesting because it wasn't your classic, you have two people in front of you, one's going to have chai olam, one's going to have chai sha. It was a little more complicated. The hospital only had one or two respirators. And they made a rule in the hospital that if a person comes in, and I'm going to just translate it into halachic terminology, and they only have chai sha left, then you do not give them the respirator. Even if there isn't another patient there. Because statistically, there's going to be a person that comes in very soon that's going to have chai olam, and he's going to need the respirator. So, for example, what are they concerned about? They're concerned that the guy's going to come in, he's 98 years old, he's on his way out, he only has a couple days left, you give him the respirator, and then 5, 10, 20 minutes later, an hour later, a healthy guy, 20-year-old guy, comes in, he has like a bullet wound, he needs a respirator, but he's going to live. He's going to have another 50, 60 years left to live, but you can't take the guy off the respirator. Now, they weren't dealing with luck problems, they were dealing with just practical problems, because if you take the guy off the respirator, the family is going to go crazy. You know, you can't take my husband off. I know he's 98, but you're killing him. So they had to make a rule that you're not going to put the guy in the respirator in the first place. Now, the question was that there were Jewish doctors in this hospital, and they asked the Shaila, is this mutter to not give the Chayisha the respirator? And is it usher? Meaning, is this murder? The guy's right here in front of you. And also, meaning, think of it like this. Are you allowed to... Would the guy be hired to lose his job? Meaning, let's say the doctor, if he refused to do this, he'd have to lose his job. What would you do? This is an important question in terms of general. In general, the answer is absolutely not. You're not allowed to violate halacha, even if you're going to lose your job. It depends what the halacha is. In terms of murder, here we're dealing with murder. So that would be a very, very scary zone, where you would not be allowed to kill someone or save your job. But for certain things, in terms of tzarach gadol, you might be allowed. But in this case, you definitely... Nowadays, people are generally very understanding, and they'll allow you to just appoint a different doctor to take care of it. But these are serious questions. If the rules of the hospital went against halacha, what are you supposed to do? So the doctor asks us, so what do you guys... So what are the problems? What are the problems? Why would you have to save the guy with chayisha that comes in?
Because he is sick and... He needs treatment.
Exactly. So first of all, you can say, just very simply, that the guy's right here in front of me. Right? I mean, think of it like this. First of all, we have to establish, is Chai Olam better than Chai Isha? If not, then there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to talk about. You save the guy who's Chai Isha right now. Yeah. So we established last week that Chai Olam is better than Chai Isha, most probably, according to almost everyone. Then gets into the question which I mentioned earlier, which is the guy here is right in front of you. He's Lefanachal. So great, in the future you're going to have Chai Olam, or you might have Chai Olam, but right now you have Chai Shah Vadai right here in front of you. So how can you pass it up? How can you say that I'm not going to save you because in the future I'm going to be able to save someone else? How can you argue that?
So, would we also mention that if someone kills a person that's Chai Shah, that's not really like full-fledged murder?
If someone, so in terms of being chayiv nisa,
yeah.
So that might be only if you're a treifa. In terms of if you're a goses, that's a machlokas. The Rambam holds you are chayiv nisa for killing goses. But we're not talking about the questions of murder right now. We're talking about in terms of a hierarchy of saving. You have a guy right here in front of you. Why should you wait for someone chayiv? So, what are the options? What are the problems? First of all, like we mentioned, the problem of lefanecha, the guy's right here. But also, there's in general this concept in halacha of taking the first opportunity that comes your way. Where do we see it? So, for example, the Radvaz brings some fascinating case of a guy who's in jail. And the people that are in charge of the jail say that we'll give you one day to go out and daven with a minyan. One day to go out and daven with a minyan. So he asked the question, do I take today and go out right now? Would I wait till Yom Kippur, where I can, you know, get the greatest day possible to daven? Meaning, do I take the right now, which is not so good? Or do I wait out, hold out, for a much better opportunity, much better mitzvah in the future? Or there's another case, let's say, where a person isn't well, he's sick. And the doctor says that you can only fast one of the following to fast. So, for example, Tzom, Gedalia, and Yom Kippur come out within almost a week with each other. And let's say the doctor says you can only fast one of them. So does the guy say, listen, Tzom Gedalia is right here, right now. I'm going to fast there. Do I say that? No, I'm going to hold off for Yom Kippur, which is a much, much greater fast day, and I'm going to do that one. So do you take the one that comes? For example, let's say on Sukkos, you only have enough money to either buy a lulav and esrog, or you know, a set of a lulav and esrog, or tefillin. Do you say that right now, and let's say you hold that you don't wear tefillin Well, let's say it's going to be the first day of Yom Kippur, so you're not going to be able to wear tefillin anyways. So, do you hold off and get tefillin, which if you hold tefillin is a much bigger mitzvah? Or do you say, no, right now, I have an opportunity to be mekayem the mitzvah of lulav, so I'm going to take it around. So in general, the Radvaz holds that you definitely choose the first mitzvah. So he brings a bunch of different principles. He says, ain't over no mitzvahs, there's reason makdim al mitzvahs, and mitzvah bali adcha al tach mitzana, all these different principles, which is implying that you should take the first one. So if we assume that's true...
So there is no tzadik, tzadik.
It's true. But, no, okay, fine, but you can also argue that...
No, I
hear you, but that's not possible.
Right now.
The whole point of tzadik and tzadik is when you have them both right here in front of you. So then you're going to say, I'll do the one for you to do. Here, you can't do tefillin on Sukkot. And you can't do Yom Kippur on Tzom Gedalia. And you can't, meaning we're dealing with, you have to choose one. And you can't daven Yom Kippur today because Yom Kippur is not for another long time. So we have to choose the one that's either in front of us or the one that's going to come to us eventually, which might be greater. So assume Leader Vaz, you know, brings down in his case where you definitely choose the first one. You don't hold off. So if that's true, I understand the Chayol might be better than Chayisha, but right now you have Chayisha. Right now you have Chayisha. So right now you should choose the guy who's in front of you in the hospital. You should stay with him, even though eventually you get something that's better. So what do you answer? I mean, a lot of the post and paskin, this was correct. And they are allowed to hold off and wait to save the guy with Chayisha. So you could argue, no. This, you're absolutely right. You save the guy with Chayisha right in front of you. End of story. And certain problems can do if... Rav Osner holds that, some other poskim hold that. So why shouldn't we hold like that? Why should we save Mutter?
Because it's Mutter to hold it off?
No, it's Mutter, yeah, to hold off, to save the Yadkhaim.
I would say that's Dina because it's according to how those rules. So
that doesn't apply when it comes to things that completely violate halacha. So if we're going to paskin, so that's a very touchy topic, and it gets into a lot of different. Halachic political issues and how far we do dina machus dina. Dina machus dina might be in terms of practice, but not in terms of where it violates halacha. So we have to qualify dina machus dina. But why would we argue? So first of all, you can say that safek chai olam is better than vadai chai shah. This is where Moshe Feinstein holds. He holds that, granted, you don't have chai olam right here, and you only have chai shah. But Chai Olam, even if it's only Safik, overrides Chai Shah. Oh, what about the problem with Radvaz? What about the problem with all these cases where we see that no, you take the first thing that comes your way? So first of all, we can argue the other side that no, you don't have to take the first thing that comes your way. That we don't pass it that way. We pass it that you hold off for the bigger thing. You hold off for the better thing. But even if we want to accept the Radvaz, we could. We can simply create a chilek between all those other cases and the case here of Pitiach Nefesh. Why? What chiluk can you make? First of all, you can say that when it comes to other cases, you have a choice between two different things. You have a choice between davening Yom Kippur and davening today. You have a choice between fasting Yom Kippur and fasting Tzom Gedalia. A choice between the mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of lulav. And in all those cases, even though there's a bigger mitzvah, you choose the smaller mitzvah because it's right now. But it could be that when it comes to Chai Olam versus Chai Shah, which we talked about last week, Chai Olam knocks out Chai Shah. That in the makom of Chai Olam, Chai Shah just isn't significant. So when we ask the question, why are you allowed to risk your life? What case of classic case, person has a couple months left to live, and he can go through this really risky surgery where he has an opportunity to live for, let's say, 10 years. You're risking your Chai Shah for Chai Olam. Why can you do that? So one option is that when you have an opportunity for Chai Olam, Chai Shah is just insignificant. It's just knocked out. So in all those other cases, it's a choice between two different things. But when it comes to Chai Olam versus Chai Shah, it's not a choice between two different things. All you really have is Chai Olam, because Chai Olam knocks out Chai Shah. Now it's harder to say that when you're dealing with someone else's. I mean, when it comes to risking your own Chai Shah for Chai Olam, you can say Chai Olam knocks out Chai Shah. When you're dealing with two different people, it's hard to say his Chai Olam knocks out his Chai Shah. It's a little more difficult, a little more of a stretch. But you can also argue that in all those different cases, we're dealing with, you don't even know for sure that you're going to get the opportunity to do the mitzvah. So for example, let's take the case in the jail. Maybe the guards will change their mind. When it comes to Yom Kippur, they'll say, we're not going to give it to you anymore. Or maybe when it comes, who knows? But here, that's the whole point, is that we're relying on statistics, which is that the guy's for sure going to come. Let's say every day the hospital has always had people that came in with chayom. So we know for sure. When you're so certain that it's going to happen, that might be another cheshbon to say that, granted, in the case of mitzvahs, you take the one that comes your way because you don't know if they're the ones that will come in the future. But here we're relying on statistics where we know for sure it's going to come. And that might be another reason to make chayom. So that's why, if you look in terms of the poskim, the Tzitz Eliezer, or someone's on Erbach or Sternbach, they all hold that it's absolutely mutter, and that you are allowed to. There are certain poskim holds aser, that would be Ravazer and Moshe Klein, but in general, the poskim holds in this case you would be allowed to save the gav v'chayol. Now, if Moshe Feinstein holds that it depends, what does it depend on? It depends on how you're going to interact with the guy with Chai Shah. So if the guy with Chai Shah is, let's say, unconscious, then it's fine. But if the guy, imagine the guy with Chai Shah comes in, and he says, "Doctor, can you help me?" And you tell him, no, I can't help you. And he knows that you've given up on him. He knows that you are not going to treat him and give him the respirator because the guy is, he's a goner. So if by not treating him, you're going to deteriorate his condition, you're going to make him lose hope, and you're going to make him basically get into a much worse situation, it's absolutely awesome. Why? Because if you choose not to save the guy with Chayshah because you're going to save the guy with Chayol, and that's fine. But if by not saving the guy with Chayshah, you're really going to worsen his condition, and it's also interesting in terms of psychology. Psychology plays such a factor in
the whole topic of health psychology.
Yeah. If the patient thinks that you've given up on him, he's going to give up on himself. And if he gives up on himself, he's a goner. He's going to be in a much worse situation. So therefore, Moshe Fein says, in that case, you would have to treat the guy with Chai Shah. But if the guy's unconscious and he comes in and you basically can keep him in a separate room and not give him the respirator, then it's fine. But when you're going to deteriorate his situation, you're going to worsen the situation, then it's not okay. But let's go to another situation. What if the guy with... It's not choosing between a guy with chayom versus a guy with chayishah, but rather you're dealing with a situation where we're kind of going back to our case of Bar Metzia, where you can choose to save one with chayolam or give them both chayishah. So let's say go back to the case in the desert. You are a third party. You're fine. You don't need water. But there are two guys there who need water. If you give it to one of them, he'll survive. He'll make it to the yeshiva. He'll be fine. If you give it to both of them, they'll both get chayisha, and they're both going to die. So what do you do? Do you save one? Because here we're not dealing with chayolam versus chayisha. We're dealing with chayolam of one versus chayisha of both. Let's assume that either one of them could get the chayolam. So it's not like, okay, that might make a difference. But here we're dealing with either one could get the chayolam, and obviously we'll have to make distinction in terms of why you choose one over the other. But would you still save the Chai Olam, or would you have to give them both? Would you have to save the Chai Shah both? What do you guys think?
Personally,
the
water.
It is a water case, exactly. I mean, it really is. Same thing as medication. You have enough medication, there's a shortage of medication. You can save one person, get them fully better, or you can give them both a little bit of the medication, and they won't recover, but you'll extend their lives a little bit.
Otherwise, they'll die immediately if you don't give them anything?
If you don't give them anything, they'll die immediately. Exactly.
I guess the difference is here is that they don't even have the capacity to help themselves, like the water, because you're a doctor.
Exactly. So that's why we're not dealing with Chayach HaKodem, we're dealing with a third party. We're dealing with your outside situation. How do you decide who to save? Are you allowed to? I mean, this gets back to in terms of my causes. Are you allowed to? But let's say you are allowed to. Meaning, what's better?
Sounds like Chayolam is better.
So you think Chayolam is better?
Yeah.
Assuming Chayolam is better than Chayishah, you should say the Chayolam.
Yeah.
Now, why would you argue, let's play devil's advocate, why would you argue that you should not be allowed to save the Chayolam of one, that you have to save the Chayishah of both?
Because, like, what's his name? What's it called? That two people shouldn't see
Bambitura?
Yeah, Bambitura, his Shita.
Okay.
That says, like, that his brother shouldn't see his,
okay, very good.
His brother die or whatever.
Now, is it possible, let's fight for, we hold like Urbikiba. So let's fight for Urbikiba. Is it possible that Urbikiba holds that when it's your own water, then you drink it? But if you're a third party, then somehow Urbikiba would change his Shita to be like Bambitura. That really, if Urbikiba would hold, that you both split it. On that. Well, let's think it out. First of all, as a third party, maybe it would be a decision. I mean, when you're saving yourself, you're saying chayecha kodem. I'm just saving myself. And it's obvious. I'm not deciding that I'm better. I'm just saving myself. When I'm a third party, I'm outside of the situation. I have no bias. I have no real reason to save one or the other. Maybe I'm not allowed to choose. Chayecha kodem doesn't apply, so we can go back to my chazans. How do you choose one or the other? You can also argue that chaye olam equals chaye shah. Now, we established last week that we don't really hold that way. It seems that we don't hold that way. Because you're allowed to risk, like the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Chaf Zayin, that you're allowed to risk Chai Shav for Chai Olam. But, it's possible that, remember, we saw the Grach last week that Ben Petur holds Chai Olam is equal to Chai Shav. Maybe Rabbi Akiva really agrees with that, in principle, but Chai HaKodmin is a Chiddush, that you're still allowed to save yourself. But when you don't have Chai HaKodmin, and you're a third party, you're the doctor, maybe you can't choose. Maybe only when it comes to saving your own life, you're allowed to choose. When it comes to saving someone else, you're not allowed to choose. But there's a little more of a nuanced perspective. And this is what I want to kind of develop a little bit. Which is that what if the Chiddush of Rabbi Akiva is that, in general, our goal is to maximize life. Right? We want to maximize life. We want everyone to live as long as possible. Now, when you, from your own perspective, it's much better that you get Chai Olam than both of you get Chai Shah. From your own perspective, if you're in the desert, you'd much rather that you get Chai Olam than you both live for a couple hours or a couple days. But it's possible that from an objective perspective, meaning outside of your perspective, from a third party perspective, it's better to maximize the amount of people living. So, from a third-party perspective, we'd much rather both of you guys live for a little longer than just one of you living, even if it's going to be for Chai Olam. However, this is the ultimate step, when it comes to when you're holding the actual object, then you have a chiddush of Chayecha Kodmin. Meaning that when you're not holding the life-saving object, we want to maximize everyone's life. When you are holding the object, then you're allowed to override that objectivity because now it's your own life and you have the object in your hand, you can drink and save your own life. Now, there's a flaw in this, which is what we've established last week. You happily just knock all those shitas out of the way, which is what most people hold. Why? Because Chai Olam is much better than Chai Shah. So the whole concept of maximizing life is not the amount of people living, but it's Chai Olam. And Chai Olam is so much better than Chai Shah. It's much better that one person have Chai Olam than two people get Chai Shah. And that's the Chazon Ish. If you look at the Chazon Ish, if you look at source number 13, the Chazon Ish says, V'nira, the Chai of Litin Le'echod, meaning Chazrish is telling us that no, this is a principle that Chai Olam is always better than Chai Shah, and you should always save Chai Olam over Chai Shah. Now, just to show you that there is a sheet that holds that even Rabbi Akiva would say that once you lose the ownership of the object, once there's a third party, you can no longer use Chai HaKodem, then even he would agree that you have, the third party would have to give it to both of them, and they have to split it. If you look back at source number 11, look at the third line, bold line, V'kasuv. This is the Chidush Arin. He says, V'kasuv, the Kevan Dekan, Leka HaGilin Shal Bekivu De Chai HaKodem, Im Kein Hodri Al-Din Shal Ben Petura, Umutiv Sheyish Tushneim V'yemutu V'ayish Te'achem V'yemutu. Meaning that the whole chiddush of Chai HaKodmin is only when you're holding it. It's only when you're saving your own life. When you lose that, when you were dealing with a third party, it goes back to Ben Petura. Ben Petura would say you save them both. You say the you can't choose. My chassis. So, just to close off, in terms of what we've established so far, we've dealt with many different cases where you're saving your own life. We showed how Ben Petura clearly has a lot of svara behind what he's saying. We showed in the previous shirim that whether it's just machlokas of risking your life, or whether it's machlokas of losam gam reach, or machazes, or stealing to save your life. But today we've really established stepping back from saving yourself to a third party. And we said that when you're a third party, you might not be able to use the concept of the chayach kogim, but that might not matter if we have objective principles. So if we always value Chai Olam over Chai Shah, you would be allowed to choose and save the guy who has Chai Olam, which is how we generally pass it. And in terms of all the other Cheshbonos, which we didn't really get to develop today, but there are many other different calculations of how do you choose who to save. So the Mishnah talks about inherent value hierarchy. So let's say Talmud Chacham versus Amaretz, or in terms of Kohanim, Levim, Yisrael, and that hierarchy. There's a whole issue, which I didn't want to get into today, of man versus woman. You say the Mishnah seems to say, and we'll get very, very close, but we're not going to go into it now. If you look at source number 17, the Mishnah in Horio says, Ha'ish kodim le'isha l'hachayos. So a man comes from a woman l'hachayos. So the big question which the Rishon grapple with is, what does l'hachayos mean? Does it mean for sustenance, like food, or does l'hachayos mean like to give life, to save? So that's actually a big machlokas Rishonim. What the svar is that you'd save a man for a woman, that's a little more complicated, we're not going to go into right now. But what I want to do next week is the final shiur of this semester, really delve into a little more when you're a third party in terms of saving, and then get into a little bit of a deeper question, which is how to understand Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva holds Chayecha Kodman, and yet Rabbi Kiva also holds Zeklakol L'Torah Rabbi Haftal Yecha Kamocha. And the question, it seems to be a contradiction. How can you say that you save your life first and you come first if Rabbi Kiva also thinks you're supposed to love your friend like yourself? And that gets into a really, really interesting topic which we're going to develop more next week. Okay.